First today, the rise of the libertarians. A 2013 poll showed that nearly a quarter of Americans lean toward a libertarian political philosophy. And here's a factoid for you. Back in the 1970s, libertarians were calling for same-sex marriage. Libertarians are big on civil liberties and free markets, and some say libertarians are more liberal than Democrats on social issues and more fiscally conservative than Republicans. David Bowes is the vice president of the Cato Institute and author of the new and updated The Libertarian Mind, A Manifesto for Freedom. He speaks in town tonight at the Kansas City Public Library. David, welcome to Kansas City. So nice to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
So libertarians were calling for same-sex marriage in the mid-1970s. Why were they so far ahead of the curve?
If you start from principles, then it's pretty easy to arrive at conclusions that may not yet be politically acceptable. So when the Libertarian Party was founded, and most libertarians aren't the Libertarian Party, but that's a place where they were actually talking about specific political issues, in their very first platform in 1972, they talked about repeal of all laws regulating sexual practices. And in their 1976 campaign, they added marriage as a specific thing. And as I say, it just comes logically from believing that the government should guarantee life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And that's the principle you're talking about. Out there.
Right.
Okay. And so basically, libertarians believe in what, in plain and simple terms, David?
The libertarianism is the philosophy of freedom, and that includes personal and economic freedom. One way to put it is libertarianism is the idea that adult individuals have the right and the responsibility to make the important decisions about their own lives.
Just that simple. And so how does it apply to something like the war on drugs?
Well, I think adult individuals have the right and the responsibility to decide what they will put in their bodies, whether that is cigarettes or marijuana or 20-ounce Cokes in New York City. Mayor Bloomberg didn't think you should be able to buy a large soda. You have the right and the responsibility. And what that means is you have to make the decision. You have to take responsibility for it. So if using too much alcohol or the wrong drugs or whatever causes you to harm other people, then you're responsible for those consequences. Mm-hmm. But being able to decide who to marry, what to read, what to smoke, adults should be able to make that decision.
So the war on drugs was a mistake.
Yes, I think the war on drugs was a mistake. Okay. Alcohol prohibition was a mistake in the 1920s. We've actually been prohibiting drugs for about a century, but we stepped it up in the Nixon years, and stepped it up again in the Reagan years, and we're now arresting more than a million people a year for using marijuana. We have a very large percentage of the 2 million Americans in jail are in there for drug crimes. It's costing us a lot of money. And it's costing a lot of young people their lives. Even if they come out of jail, it's pretty tough to get your life back when the first thing you did was get arrested and incarcerated for minor crimes.
David Bowes is my guest. He's the author of The Libertarian Mind, A Manifesto for Freedom. Let's run through some basic issues then, David, and just speak in some generalities here about these things so listeners can get this party in some kind of perspective here. Taxes. Too much,
well,
right?
Let me be clear. I'm not speaking for any party. I'm speaking for an idea.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Sure.
Taxes should be lower, flatter, and simpler. Taxation is taking money from people without their consent. And so if you believe in freedom, there ought to be an absolute minimum of it.
But it is with their consent if you're electing these people to public office,
though,
right?
No, there's a lot of problems with consent. When I buy a computer, I am consenting to the agreement there. When I buy a restaurant meal, I'm consenting. But if I voted for the losing candidate, then I haven't consented to all the crazy stuff the winner does. And if I thought both candidates were bad, I haven't consented to everything the winner does. And even if I voted for the winner, I only had two choices, and they both had things I didn't like. So no, I don't think that is the same kind of consent. Now, it is better to have a government elected based on the consent of the governed, but we shouldn't put too much emphasis on that consent of the governed. We consent to have these people rather than those other people be the rulers, but the Constitution puts limits on what they can do. And in my view, it puts a lot more limits than either party thinks it does.
Then gay rights.
Well, gay rights, again, adult individuals should be able to live their lives the way they want to.
Okay. Gun rights.
people should have the right to own guns. If you start shooting them at people, that's a very different matter. Then you can be arrested. But owning guns is not only a constitutional right under the Second Amendment, but a right that individuals ought to have.
Now, we're building an interesting coalition of people here, those who favor gay rights and those who favor gun rights.
Well, that's right. And some people have said libertarians have something to offend everyone. But I think, you know, freedom
Every party should, I guess, yeah.
Freedom is the fundamental philosophy of America. So when you talk to Americans and you say, I think people ought to be free to do anything they want to so long as they respect the equal rights of others, I think you get pretty general agreement with that.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to abortion.
Well, abortion, I think, is a complicated issue for libertarians. If you believe that the purpose of government is to protect every person's life, liberty, and property, then if you focus on life, you may say, that's a human life in there. If you focus on liberty, and this is the only area where I really think there is that kind of clash, then you say, well, it's the woman's liberty to decide whether to carry a child. In my observation, two-thirds or three-quarters of libertarians are pro-choice, but a significant number are pro-life, and I think they respect each other because they understand how you can get to that conclusion.
How about something like the war against Iraq?
Well, libertarians believe that one of the fundamental purposes of government is to protect us from threats to our life, liberty, and property. So that includes street criminals and burglars, and it also includes foreign terrorists and other governments. So defense is an appropriate job of the federal government. Offense, going around the world looking for wars to get into, I think is a bad idea. It's not generally what libertarians would support. When we were attacked on 9/11, a lot of libertarians said, go after the people who attacked us. And if that includes the government of Afghanistan that was harboring them, go do that. But Iraq was not part of 9/11. Iraq had not attacked us. And so I think it was a war of choice. It was unnecessary. It was based on information that was untrue. I don't necessarily say that the administration knew it was untrue, mm-hmm. but it was untrue. And even if it had been true, it didn't warrant a war. And now what have we got? 14 years, we're still at war, and we're actually getting sucked back in.
The Affordable Care Act.
I think libertarians believe that health care, like any other useful service, ought to be provided in the free market. Insurance companies, doctors, hospitals, patients all ought to come together and purchase what's needed, and you'll get more innovation, better drugs, and so on in a free market. So we've been moving away from that philosophy for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And Obamacare was just part of that. So I would like to repeal Obamacare, but I would also like to start getting consumers involved in what kind of health care they purchase. We already had a system that pressed us to go into employer-provided health insurance, which has regulations involved, which has low deductibles traditionally, which is not a good way to mm-hmm. handle any kind of insurance.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do in a case like health insurance where so many Americans were saying, I'm not going to buy it. I'm going to take advantage of the system the way it is.
Well, health insurance doesn't have to be as expensive as it is. There are lots of ways we could deregulate that would make it less expensive, and then people would be more likely to pay for it. One of the things that health insurance got into was trying, and particularly with Obamacare, was trying to rope young, healthy people into joining the system so they would pay more than necessary in order to take care of sicker people. Insurance works better when you actually price it according to the risk. So young men pay more for automobile insurance because they are riskier drivers. Mm-hmm. Middle-aged men, middle-aged women pay less because they're less risky drivers. If you made all automobile insurance the same price, then the people who are safer drivers would be much more reluctant to purchase it.
We're talking with David Bowes about libertarians, the political philosophy. He speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Central Library, Kansas City Public Library, 14 West 10th Street. For more information or to reserve a seat, go to kclibrary.org. And if you have questions for David on libertarians and what they think and what they do, 816-235-2888 is our number. And again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Paul called to ask this, David, what is the libertarian position on the death penalty?
I don't know that there's exactly a libertarian position on that. My view is that if you've committed a heinous crime, cold-blooded murder, I'm not theoretically opposed to the death penalty as a punishment. However, infallibility is a difficult thing to find in human endeavors, and it's especially difficult to find in government endeavors. Mm-hmm. So as a practical matter, I think libertarians are trending against the death penalty because of the real possibility of being wrong.
So what's going on out there in the body politic these days, David? The party appears ascendant, at least to some degree. I'm wondering why. Why are the poll numbers looking better for libertarians these days than they have in quite a while?
Well, I think one thing that libertarianism is kind of the basic philosophy of America. It goes back to the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And one of the things that happens is that when the government gets bigger, people tend to react against that. That's what the Tea Party resistance was to the financial crisis, the bailouts, the takeovers, the spending bills, the healthcare takeover. All of that produced this Tea Party opposition. At the same time, people are seeing how the drug war has failed, and so you have this other libertarian movement that's starting to legalize drugs, or at least marijuana in some states. And then the gay marriage movement, as people got to know gay people and realized, hey, they're not dangerous, they're citizens like all the rest of us. Public opinion on that changed. And all of those things, I think, stem from this basic American sense that you ought to be free to live the way you want to so long as you respect the equal rights of others. Mm-hmm. And they're being provoked in a lot of areas these days with overtaxation, overregulation, overspending, an $18 trillion national debt, and that's pushing people in a libertarian direction.
So if the libertarian philosophy is sort of the basic philosophy of America, why aren't libertarian candidates doing better at the polls, whether you're presidential candidates, U.S. Senate candidates, congressional candidates? Why not?
Oh, I think candidates of the Libertarian Party face the same problem every third-party candidate does. Americans just don't much like third parties. It's very hard to get on the ballot. You have to spend all your money just getting on the ballot. You don't get any PAC contributions if you're a third-party candidate.
But you guys are on the ballot, though, aren't you?
Well, because not me. Okay, I'm in the Libertarian Party.
Yes.
I'm just a think tank guy.
Yeah, okay.
The Libertarian Party is on the ballot many places, but still, to get their presidential candidate on the ballot, they probably have to spend a couple million dollars in the states that they're not already on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big chunk of what a third-party candidate can raise. The only third-party candidate who's done well in our memory was Ross Perot, because he's a billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the challenge. Libertarian candidates in the major parties are in a different situation. Rand Paul right now is a libertarian-ish candidate. He never says he's actually a libertarian.
Yes.
And he's been doing pretty well in the polls in the presidential race. And, of course, he came to get elected to the U.S. Senate. So that was a sign of people wanting a candidate who was pro-First Amendment, pro-Second Amendment, pro-fiscal conservatism.
I want to talk about Rand Paul in just a moment, and I also want to get to our phone calls here. Just quickly, you've written about Rand Paul just for Newsweek recently. Is he the most libertarian of all the candidates from either party who are now in the field for president, or is there someone else you might point to?
Well, other than the candidate that the Libertarian Party will eventually nominate,
right,
then yes, I think of the major presidential candidates in Republican and Democratic parties, he would be the one who is not, in my view, libertarian on every issue, but is libertarian on a wider range of issues.
For example, just help me there.
Well, I think, for instance, he's not been a supporter of gay marriage. I think that's wrong.
Right.
I think he has not been as welcoming to immigration as I think libertarians should be.
But he is libertarian in what sense, then?
On taxes, spending, overregulation, on government spying, on criminal justice reform and worrying that we're putting too many young people in jail, and on being skeptical about our continuing military involvement in the Middle East. He is possibly the most important guy in preventing President Obama from going to war in Syria back in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
He also said, if you want to go to war in Libya, you need to ask Congress for permission. Congress has to authorize wars. Now, he failed in that regard. Congress didn't stand up, and the president went ahead and did it anyway. But he's been one of the people in Congress most critical of these endless wars.
You mentioned just a minute ago government eavesdropping, NSA. The libertarian stance would be what?
Well, the libertarian stance is generally the government shouldn't be looking at your cell phone, shouldn't be looking at your personal records, unless you are, in fact, identified as someone who might be a terrorist or might be in touch with terrorists. But they shouldn't be able to sweep into everyone's cell phone just in case I might be talking to somebody who might be talking to somebody who might be talking to somebody.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Let's go to some calls. And Stacy from Lee's Summit. Stacy, welcome to Up to Date with David Bose.
Well, thank you. I would just like him to address, I think there's a false premise in a free market society that we pay for the consequences of our bad decisions. And I'll just use healthcare as an example. Folks who eat poorly, drink, or smoke have poor health outcomes, but those of us who are in the healthcare system, pre-Obamacare, would pay for their consequences due to higher healthcare costs. And a free market system, libertarian ideas would seem to continue that. How would that be fixed?
Well, to the extent that we've moved further in the direction of socializing the costs, making them apply to everybody through government, we've actually exacerbated that problem. It's going to get worse. But in a free market, insurance companies are free to price according to risk. So if you're a smoker, you should pay higher insurance rates. If you're overweight, it makes sense that you would also pay higher insurance rates. If you ride motorcycles, you would likely pay higher insurance rates. So the market can adjust for that problem. It's when we create regulated socialism or actual socialism by having the government take care of our health care that we not only create this problem, but then we get people saying, well, you shouldn't be allowed to smoke. You shouldn't be allowed to drink a large soda because it's going to impose costs on me. It doesn't have to impose costs if we actually have a free market.
Stacy,
but I haven't seen the free market system prior to Obamacare actually address that. In fact, we were paying higher health care costs itself along that way because providers and hospitals and insurance companies are able to cost more.
Well,
they're not going to look out for the cheaper consumer. They actually exceed profits.
Well, see, you're cutting out a little bit there, Stacy. I'll put you on hold here.
Yeah. Insurance is not a fully free market. I think it should be. But to the extent that insurance companies are able to make those kinds of decisions, as I was saying earlier, they charge young men more for automobile insurance. On the other hand, they should charge young men less for health insurance because young men are a lot less likely to get cancer or heart disease. And what the Obamacare system is trying to do is pull all those young men into a system and pay rates that are much higher than they need to pay in order to take care of the sick people. So Obamacare is explicitly predicated on socializing the costs, spreading them over everybody instead of costs that reflect the actual risks that you're undertaking. Now, I don't know that insurance will be perfect. It's hard to figure out whether I'm eating more donuts than Steve. Smoking, we might have, you know, you have to write down whether we smoke on the insurance form, and we can be held to that, and motorcycles and things like that. But insurance tries to take account of those systems, and government doesn't.
Let's go to Jim from Lenexa. Jim, good morning. You're on with David Bose.
Hey, good morning. Yes, it's sort of repetitious of the previous call, but once you try to mix capitalism with healthcare, you're going to have problems because the capitalists will always rule. And just like with pharmaceutical companies and hospitals in general, their prices have gone through the roof. So there's no room for both in the same mix.
Because your point, Jim, is that profit becomes more important than people's health, is what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, I would suggest what has caused the substantial increase in medical costs and insurance costs is precisely getting away from capitalism, getting away from the free market, to the extent that we're not paying individually for our health care. We're not even paying for the insurance because our employers have been paying for the insurance. That means we don't much care what it costs. When I go to buy a car or a computer or a hamburger, I'm well aware of what it costs and whether it's better than the more expensive hamburger, whether I'm willing to pay more for this fancier computer. With healthcare, I don't really care. I don't ask the doctor how much he charges because, hey, it's being paid for by my employer's insurance or it's being paid for by government. That tends to drive prices up, and then we come up with HMOs and things like that to try to control what you and I are going to buy because we don't have any personal incentive. So I think getting the consumer back into the mix so that every consumer is saying, why is that costing me so much, and why did my neighbor pay less to his doctor or his hospital? That's the way prices get constrained.
Okay. I hope that helps, Jim.
Thanks a lot. But it's still when a person's sick, there's no time to negotiate with what they're paying for health care. When you have a car, or, you know, as an example with young men drivers, that's obvious. But with health care, it's not good timing.
Yeah, that's true. But remember, we buy insurance when we're healthy. So we can price the insurance. We can ask how much insurance. And a lot of medical care is not emergency medical care. Even if you discover that you have a heart problem or cancer, you have a few days, a few weeks that you can talk to your friends and your relatives about which doctors and hospitals worked for them. People do that now. They just don't ask what the cost was. They only ask about the quality, which is perfectly reasonable. But in every other system, we do ask both price and quality.
Have you tried to get the answer from a doctor what it's going to cost, though, for a particular procedure?
You are absolutely right. And that's because we're not in a free market. If you ask a doctor what the price of cosmetic surgery will be, what the cost of LASIK surgery, if it's not covered by insurance, you will get a number. It's when it's covered by insurance or by government that it becomes very complicated. And yes, I do know this. I have tried to ask pharmacies, is your price for my blood pressure medicine less than some other pharmacies? And they honestly can't tell you, because until you put it through with your insurance plan, they don't know what it costs. But that's all because government is so heavily involved.
Jim, thank you for the good call. Let's go to Kim from Belton. We're talking about the libertarian political philosophy. Kim, good morning.
Hi. I missed part of that last call because I was talking with your person. But going back to what Stacey was saying, I think what he was trying to get at, and what I would like to know, is pre-Obamacare, people were not required to buy insurance, which is why my insurance was higher. Because these people opted to not buy insurance, then they got into an accident or they got a serious illness, and they weren't able to pay all their bills. So those of us that have insurance, our rates went up. What is going to make these people just go out and buy insurance just because? I mean, they're not going to buy it if they don't want to buy it, and they don't have to.
Well, they'd be more likely to buy it if the costs were lower, and I believe the costs would be lower if we didn't have all this third-party payment. Anytime you're not paying for a service yourself, then you're indifferent to what the cost will be, and that's what has caused prices to skyrocket. You know, it's like student loans. The more we spend on college student loans, the higher college student prices get. Why do you think that is? Because the college keeps raising the price because the federal government's going to pay more for the loan. When people are paying for themselves, a free market is not a perfect system. It's just better than socialism. And I think we should have fewer socialist elements in our health care and more free market consumer-driven elements.
And again, but you would not require everyone to have health insurance of one kind or another.
I would not require people to have health insurance, but they are responsible then for the consequences. It isn't insurance rates that will go up. It is the question of whether hospitals or doctors will provide care that isn't paid for. And there are challenges in that. All I would say is the challenges there, the added costs are less than they are when you get essentially socialism working. And each recent step that we've taken has made our healthcare system more socialist.
Of all the presidents we've had, David, which president came closest to being sharing much of the libertarian philosophy?
Well, certainly George Washington, who launched a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal, and was very clear that this nation was to be a republic, not a monarchy under George Washington. He was very clear about resigning power, giving up power.
He set the template, yeah.
And that was very important. He also believed that it wasn't the president's job to veto bills from Congress just because he disagreed with them. He thought it was Congress's job to pass laws and the president's job to carry them out, and he would only veto them if he thought they were unconstitutional. Thomas Jefferson, with the glaring exception of the fact that he was a slaveholder, tried to reduce the size of government. So did Andrew Jackson. He got rid of the Central Bank of the United States. In more recent times, it's hard to point to somebody who's been good on a wide range of issues from a libertarian point of view.
The party came along when?
Well, there were parties to some extent by the time Jefferson ran against Adams.
Wow.
They weren't as fully formed. And of course, the founders originally thought there wouldn't be parties. They didn't think parties were appropriate. And there were barely parties in England at the time. But as I say, by 1800, when the Jeffersonians drafted Vice President Jefferson to run against President Adams, you pretty well had Federalist and Democratic-Republican parties at that point.
Steve called with this question. David, if fallibility is why you're against the death penalty, then shouldn't you also oppose people being imprisoned for life in light of the number of cases where it's been proven that the prosecution was fallible and that the wrong person was convicted?
Well, we have to make judgments there. This guy in Charleston, I don't think there's any doubt that he's guilty, and it's fine with me if he goes to jail for life, and it doesn't really bother me if he were given the death penalty. However, sometimes we're not as sure, and the question is, how sure can we be? How sure do we have to be before we put somebody in jail? And I guess I would say, if you've got somebody who's been convicted of cold-blooded murder, then I don't see a problem with putting that person in jail for life. But if new evidence comes to light, then you would have to reconsider that. But I don't want a 5-year sentence just because, hey, he might not be guilty.
Jay had a question that I wanted to ask, too. He wants to know, should there be public education or should it all be privately funded based on the libertarian philosophy?
There should be lots more education of the public than there is now. But if the question is, should there be government schools, then let me be clear that I'm not speaking for Rand Paul or anybody else running for office, but as a person who wrote a book called The Libertarian Mind, I believe education is a useful service that people will pay for, and it ought to be private, and we would have so much more innovation. That's why I say public education versus government schools. I don't know that it's necessary that every child go to the same box from 8 to 3 every day for 12 years. Do you think it really takes 12 years to teach people what they get by the end of high school? I don't. I think online education, I think homeschooling, I think new kinds of educational systems, whether it's Montessori or the Edison schools, could do a much better job. Every form of information transfer in our society has radically changed in 30 years, except the post office and the government schools, and I would like to see some of that innovation coming into those systems.
Clara from Savannah on the Missouri side isn't convinced you've still answered the question about health care. Clara, good morning.
Hi there. Just real quickly, I agree with a lot of the libertarian thinking, but he's talking about a world where things are as they ought to be, but they're not. And no one yet, until Barack Obama, has tackled health care. They haven't gotten anything done for people. And I agree with the school thing, but you can't just – I don't know what he thinks everybody would do if we just cut it off and start all over, because there's a lot of stuff going on. People would fall on their faces. So how would he address that? Thank you.
Yeah, bye. Thank you, Claire.
I think people are a lot more competent than other people give them credit for. I almost never hear anybody saying, if there were multiple schools available to me, I wouldn't know how to choose one. I hear them saying other people wouldn't know how to choose one. I almost never hear anybody say, there are so many cars out there. I wish there weren't so many cars. I wish there was just one car that the government built, and then I wouldn't have to choose because I don't know how to choose a car. You know what? I don't know how to choose a car. But what I do know is that competition means that all the cars are better than they would be if the government produced them. We can see that pretty clearly. Look at the German cars in West Germany and the German cars in East Germany. Plus, I have friends who know more about cars than I do, and hopefully there are things I know more about than they do, computers, books, music, whatever. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of ways to find out how to choose schools, how to choose doctors, and so on, What I want to see is innovation. I want to see improvement. And we're just not getting improvement in the schools. And I don't think we're getting improvement in the healthcare system, even though we are still getting new drugs and new technology, because we have the closest thing to a capitalist healthcare system in the world. And that's why all the new drugs and the new technologies happen here.
Well, David, you stirred them up. Appreciate you coming in. Lots of phone calls, lots of emails. Sure appreciate you being here.
And I'll answer more questions tonight.
That's right. David Bowe speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Central Library, Kansas City Public Library. That's the branch at 14 West 10th Street. More information, kclibrary.org. It's been fun, David. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
David Bowe, again, is the author of The Libertarian Mind.